Hi, I'm James Schillinglaw for Virtual Vacation Events, The New Age of Luxury. And today we have a panel on selling luxury. We're calling it exotic river cruising around the world. This is opposed to traditional European cruises, and we have a panel on that as well. And we have three gentlemen who really have products in that area. And it's anywhere from Egypt to the Amazon, to the Mekong, to Africa, in fact. So, and there's a lot of different exotic river cruising that we can focus on. And this is really a different kind of river cruising, as you'll find out. First of all, let me introduce our panelists. And if you could just wave your hand, saying hi, if you can. Gary Murphy, who's Vice President of Sales and co-owner of Emma Waterways. Hello, Gary.
Hello.
Steve Spivak, who's Senior Vice President of Sales. I always get that mixed up, of Tauk.
That's fine. Yeah, I'll take that.
I can promote you if you'd like. Steve. I have that power on this panel. It's amazing. And then we have Francesco Gallizugaro, who is the, owner and founder of Aqua Expeditions. And we're going to talk. Yeah, good morning. And we have Francesco all the way from Singapore. Is that where you are?
There you go. That's it. That's home for me.
So Gary is an exotic place. He's on the freeway in Los Angeles. So
actually, I pulled off of it.
Okay. Exotic.
You're not driving. That's all we care about.
No.
Anyway, so let's get straight to it. First of all, the first question I'm going to start with you, Gary, while you're still, on the road. How do you define sort of exotic luxury river cruising today? What does your company offer in brief in that vein?
Well, exotic and luxury. The exotic of years gone by is not that much, that's too exotic today, James. But exotic, and luxury, it's all about, I believe, about delivering experiences that really mark the calendar of one's lives, an experience that, it enriches your life, and you're doing it in a comfortable and safe manner.
Right.
And trying to keep the Western comforts traveling with you, having a nice air-conditioned environment to return to if you're coming off the Mekong, or just, having a relaxed, afternoon on the sun deck if you're on the Nile.
Yeah, absolutely. So what does Emma Waterways offer? I know you have Mekong. You have the Nile and upcoming. I think you have a new ship coming up.
We have the Mekong. We've been doing for some years, so now Madara.
Right.
And we charter the Zambezi Queen on the Chobe.
Yep, I've been on that one.
Down in Southern Africa. And then we launched the Amadalia this September on the Nile.
Yeah, so you have this one. I've been lucky enough to be on your Chobe River cruise. And in fact, I think I went with Daphne, your wife, once. That was interesting.
Yes, she sends her regards, James.
I will. We had a fantastic time, and we were another one of your team there, and it was really a very different kind of river cruise. It wasn't a typical river cruise, that's for sure. So that's what you offer. Let me turn to Steve. Your sort of exotic cruise is on the Nile, but talk a little bit about what makes that different from your real strong suit right now is in Europe, but you have this Nile cruise, so that's totally different, right?
Absolutely. And, we've taken our real value proposition in European river cruising, which is really exclusive experiences and a destination focus with very few guests in the great care of our expert Tauk tour directors. And we've simply taken that same experience and moved it to a more exotic locale. And our Egypt Jewels of the Nile cruise is on board the Oberoi Zara.
Right.
And as many of our river cruises, it combines great land components with an exceptional river journey. And the exclusive experiences are really all about doing things that you can't do on your own, right? Our private after-hours tour of King Tut's tomb, for example, and those things that you just dream of, right? Exotic is all about bucket list destinations and those places that people have always dreamed of. And so we've taken that same philosophy of providing those experiences to our guests and just moved it to the wonderful Nile, which is so popular right now. Egypt as a destination has just really soared in popularity over the past couple of years. It's safe, again, it's modern, and people are just really excited to go there.
No, absolutely. I know in Egypt is open. You can get there and people are starting. In fact, I think last year I was supposed to go on at least one or two of these to Egypt. And there's a little thing called COVID got in the way. So I don't know what happened there. Francesco, let's talk to you about, because you have cruises both on the Amazon in Peru, I believe. That's where you started. And then you made a big trek over to Singapore and began doing river cruises on the Mekong, and then you added a little yacht-like cruise as well. But you know, so tell us a little bit about what you offer and why it's different.
Thanks, James. Yeah, I mean, similar to the other panelists here and my colleagues out there, we build, own, and operate all our ships, and so that's the key differentiator, I think, in one aspect, because we don't do anything above 15 to 20 cabins. So rightly so, we do the Amazon, we do the Mekong, and obviously our first coastal explorer yacht in eastern Indonesia. But as this is river cruising, we'll focus on the Amazon and the Mekong. And we started doing this 14 years ago when I started the company, catering to obviously a demographic of guests that wants to go outside of that slight comfort zone of more traditional destinations, but without sacrificing those creature comforts, as Gary said, and providing that all in an atmosphere of small group excursions. So I think during the COVID times, what we had to do is bring to light more than ever those key differentiating factors to make sure everybody's always known that we've done groups of nothing than more than four couples per excursion. Right. And bringing that to light and making sure that everybody knows it's small, private, 15 to 20 cabins, groups of eight maximum per guide, and going to these remote wildlife destinations that are in such sought after demand in these sort of remote sanctuaries that are wildlife and nature focused, I think is poised for success given the destinations we all cover. And that's what people are looking for, to have that 9-to-5 adventure.
Yeah, you also are going to be adding yet another river cruise ship in Peru on the Amazon, correct?
Yeah, the Aquanera is sort of what kept us busy besides rebooking all our guests for last year, as we've all done up to 3-4 times, and keeping ourselves busy with that. We also delivered the Aquanera. The Aquanera was actually quite a feat because we decided to build it in Vietnam, where I have some shipyards that we worked with in the past. Then we heavy transported, because these are flat bottom river cruisers, right? These are not ocean going cruisers. We lifted her and we transported her from Ho Chi Minh to Belém, Brazil. So 12,000 nautical miles. And then she arrived late last year in Brazil, and we navigated her on her own propulsion all the way up to Iquitos, about 2,000 nautical miles. And she arrived in Iquitos late December last year, and she's having an inaugural voyage this June. So we're excited to have our newest baby in the fleet.
That's great. Now let's, Gary, go ahead.
And I'm sure, you know, Francisco and I'm sure Steve will agree with me on this. You know, the mass market, not the mass market, the large numbers obviously are going on to European river cruises. But I could tell you, when they go on an exotic, when the client has cruised on a river cruise in Europe and, you know, they've done all the rivers and then they said, okay, now I want to try the Amazon. They had wished they'd done the exotics earlier in their lives.
Really?
Because as you know, James, it's so much more impactful. My favorite river to this date is still the Mekong, just because of the experiences, those authentic experiences. These rivers are still very much the highways today. And so you see all the trade going on, all the commerce between the villages. It's a fantastic opportunity, and it's changing, so they should go now.
Absolutely. No, that's the right thing. Let's talk a little bit about the differences. You know, traditional European river cruise, we pretty much – you know, with a few variations. I mean, Gary, you have a really big one on the Danube, but the traditional one is, you know, 160, 150. It's pretty much, maybe you have a few more restaurants, something like this. The cabins are beautiful. What is different about the vessels used on your more exotic itineraries? I'm going to start with Francesco, because you got really much smaller vessels in a way, right? So tell us a little bit about what's different.
Well, first of all, the ethos that I've always put into it is that I want people to embark on a ship that they felt has been perfectly privately curated. They're getting onto a private ship without having to foot the bill of chartering a ship. And so typically our ships would do very well as a private charter, as a multi-generational buyout. And I'm sure Gary and Steve are starting to see demand for family kind of a private buyouts of larger groups that want to go into these kind of travel bubbles to a certain degree. But I think that's one big differentiating factor. Also the fact that you can customize your excursion. So getting on shore in groups of four and groups of eight allows people to kayak, to bike, to walk, to tuk-tuk. And that gets everybody's interest and piques everybody's interest because you can have a much younger audience that traditionally may think European waterways might be poised for elderly, more mature client. And here we're attracting, you know, generations that want to bike every day and walk every day and hike and do a lot of more multi-sport activities. So I think that's a key differentiator in all our destinations.
Yeah. Now, same question for Steve in terms of what's different on the Nile from your traditional European ships.
Sure. On the Nile, it's a much smaller ship. It's only 27 cabins, so far fewer guests. And in all of these destinations, these ships are purpose built to navigate these waterways, which are very different than the waterways of Europe. They reflect the destination. So whether it's the decor, the style of ship, the cuisine, a lot of times it's the amenities of the ship. You know, in Egypt, you have a much larger pool on the top deck because you have a much warmer climate than most of the year in Europe. So the ships are purpose built and they're very reflective of the destinations in which you travel, whether sure. It's the decor or the cuisine or the facilities of the ship. And, you know, small groups, as Francesco mentioned, you know, these exotic destinations are really transformative experiences.
Right.
And so enjoying them with a small group, an intimate group of people, really allows you to be much more immersed in the culture and the history and the scenery. And it allows you to really have a very intimate and personal experience with your tour directors, your cruise directors, your local guides. It's very personal. And having those smaller groups really allows people to have that experience that Gary mentioned, which is so different than what European river cruising has become, which, you know, while it's not mass market, it's certainly mainstream.
No, absolutely. It's definitely, but it's as Gary mentioned, you know, that's kind of the first cruise people do that. Sometimes they wish as they get on exotic, they think they should have done that first. But let me go to Gary also in terms of the ships and what's different on your ships. I know I've been lucky enough to be on your Chobe River cruise, and that is a totally different experience. What's different about the ships on the Mekong, on the Chobe River, on the Nile?
Well, as the ships get smaller in these exotic destinations, you're almost getting more of a yacht feel. Again, very, very comfortable cabins. Of course, the culinary experience has to be exceptional because that's what one expects. But the shore excursion itself, just tendering. You know, a lot of these places, they don't have the docking facilities you may find in Europe. So you're taking a tender, you'll pull up to a riverbank. You may, you know, walk up some stairs that have just been cut into the hillside to go and explore or to get onto your vehicle. And it's a very sexy way of encountering a destination in that you feel like you're an early adopter to traveling to this destination. And I really think the experiences also, they can't take 20 or 15 people. These are small little villages we're going to. A lot of times, you know, there's handmade shops making local crafts where you're meeting the craftspeople themselves. So it just lends itself to a more intimate type of excursion. And I mean, for example, in the Mekong, you know, in Europe at night, like half our guests go ashore and have a beer in a German beer hall with 200 Germans, which is a wonderful opportunity. But on the Mekong, often at night we anchor mid-river. You know, those little villages, they don't even have electricity. They'll be powering off a car battery. Right. So they don't want us wandering around their village in the middle of the night. But that's the beautiful aspect of it.
No, absolutely. Now, Francesco, your ships in particular are very small, both on the Amazon and the Mekong. As you mentioned, I think sometimes you have only four, five, six suites, right?
Well, our smallest one is 15, so therefore 32 guests. But again, like Gary said, I think the ability to curate your own experiences for the guests according to their interests is a big differentiating factor. Obviously, all our destinations, we also have to educate our audience to know that all our destinations are all your destinations. So there's not a huge seasonality built into, you know, when is the best time to go. It's any time of the year. And then also, I think there's a common misconception that the Amazon traditionally has been thought of, A, it's purely Brazilian Amazon, and they have to know that the Amazon is born in the Andes of Peru and flows through several countries. Also, it's on the equator, so it's great weather, and it rains. It might rain every day of the year, but it's perfectly suited that it never affects any of the excursions. Actually, we want more rain because higher the water, the deeper we go into the forest with our tenders. So it's actually conducive. As Gary said, the majority, the Amazon where we go to is an 80% seasonally flooded forest. It's only accessible by tenders and speedboats. There's no roads leading into Iquitos. So where we operate, Iquitos is the biggest city in the world disconnected by roads. It's the furthest inland seaport of the world. You can only get there by ship. And then to go upriver from there with our excursions into small groups, you know, people think, I think we have to have one common misconception that it's all about heat and bugs. And I think people clearly say that there's sometimes more heat and more bugs in their backyard in the U.S. than they have in Peru and Amazon, because you're on the water, you've got a breeze coming against you. Obviously, the vessels are fully air conditioned and the excursions are on the water's edge. That's where the wildlife is. That's where you see the pink dolphins, the howler monkeys, the macaws. So that's
more of a wildlife viewing. It really is, as opposed to in Europe, we see castles and famous historical landmarks where we're talking about with exotic. Although, yeah, obviously Egypt, we have a lot of very great.
Well, Gary will be able to provide you the big five, but on the Amazon, we'll give you the little five.
No? Okay, that's right. Well, the big five
you can't forget Angkor Wat, one of the largest pre-industrial cities in the world outside of Siem Reap in Cambodia. I mean, you talk about a great historical visit.
Yeah,
biggest religious complex in the world, right? Yep.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to you, Gary, in terms of the difference in those excursions when you're getting off the ship. Obviously, you know, those travel advisors are selling European river cruises know very well kind of the excursions and where you're going to go. These are going to be very different, right?
Yes, and I think one of the points is the guest really has to be able to be able to get up and walk a certain distance.
Right.
You know, we will help them, but in many of these villages, I don't see how they can navigate if they can't walk on a wheelchair. We will work with them, but it's about setting their expectations. We've had guests that, you know, are wheelchair confined, and it's worked, but we set their expectations. But if you can't get up and walk through certain areas, it's going to be challenging to see everything that our itinerary offers.
True, Gary, but I would agree, and I'm sure Gary would agree and Steve as well, is that the beauty of all the rivers that we operate in is that they're so narrow that even for those that are relatively restricted in ability and they may want to go on one excursion a day and they say, you know what, I'm taking the afternoon off, the beauty of just sitting and having the scenery go by and seeing it from such a close distance, you know, the widest part of the river we go on the Amazon is about 800 meters. Okay, that's why we chose the Peruvian Amazon and not the Brazilian Amazon. The Mekong as well doesn't go beyond max a kilometer. And so the beauty of sitting there and seeing life walk by and, you know, navigate by on the river's edge and see life on the river between the Cambodian hustle and bustle and the kind of rural farmland of Cambodia and the hustle and bustle of Vietnam is beautiful the minute you cross the border. And you can see that from the beauty of all these suites that all our ships have that are floor to ceiling windows and air conditioned lounges on top decks.
No, so obviously you can have a nice cruise just by looking out at the scenery going by. Steve, in terms of obviously, you know, Tauk is known as a tour operator, guided vacation operator, and you put your expertise, as you mentioned earlier, on your Nile now in terms of the excursions you offer, right?
Absolutely. It's hard to think of a more iconic destination in the world that's really, from the time we're children, we learn about the pyramids of Giza. So to be there and to see that firsthand, and then it's one monumental experience after the next. You know, you go from the pyramids of Giza to the temples of Luxor, you know, to King Tut's tomb. It's just unbelievable. And then you at the end, you navigate through the alleyways of old Cairo, and you just all the history and the culture and the cuisine. It's one thing after the next on this journey. The Sphinx, and you know, all done for you. Everything is taken care of for you, right? That is why people travel with Tauk or Aqua or Ama or any of the other great operators or cruise lines that all do such an exceptional job in these destinations. It's because we craft this for you, and it's all orchestrated like a symphony. And absolutely. So you see everything you want to see, and all the details are attended to. And on this journey, we have not only the river cruise, but there are three charter flights. So it's in one epic journey, you're seeing everything you ever dreamed of Egypt being, in a way that's luxurious and simple and elegant. And, you know, again, we let people leave their worries at home because it's all the details are attended to.
Absolutely. And that is the advantage.
You know, James, what I like to say, Steve, I say the Nile is pretty much where River Cruise started.
That's true.
Yeah, pretty much so.
Yeah, I remember back then, you know, it was me and the Pharaoh on the ship, but yeah, no, absolutely. My first river cruise, believe it or not, was on the Nile back when I first broke into the industry back in 92.
I think though, James, also what I think we all recognize in the past few years is not traditionally just trying to migrate some of their European river passengers over to our smaller, more exotic destinations, but also our guests are not necessarily traditionally cruising guests. Our right. guests are traditionally, at least for these exotic parts of the world, they're the ones that are going to the Galapagos. They're the ones that are going to African safari camps. They're the ones that want to go to Antarctica. They want to go to tiger camps in India. So these are these, what I call affluent explorers that right. want, that have heard of all these exotic parts of the world, that have had Machu Picchu and Angkor Wat on their list, but now they want to combine Siem Reap and Angkor Wat with the Mekong, or Machu Picchu and Sacred Valley with the Amazon, or obviously Cairo and Abu Simbel with the Nile. So you've got all these beautiful parts of the world. People are saying, okay, I want to do this. I want to do this right at the level that I'm expecting, which is without sacrificing any creature comforts. And I'm going to do this in a small ship. And when they get on board, they're like, this is my first ever cruise.
That's
you'd
it.
Be surprised. Yeah.
Well, actually, and Gary, you mentioned it too earlier, but let me ask the question a different way. How should our travel advisors out there who are watching target a sort of a different type of luxury client for these more exotic river cruises? Since it may not be that they're, well, I mean, some maybe you will have some are gravitating from Europe, but as Francesco said, they may be gravitating from other more adventurous experiences.
I mean, I like Francesco's point. If you've done a South African safari, that's a great target audience for a Mekong river cruise. If you've done the Galapagos,
completely.
That's a great target for the Mekong. If you have guests, even if they've done small ship, you know, passages in Alaska or the fjords in Norway, introduce them the Antarctic. You know, that's another bucket list item. You know, South Africa,
completely.
The Nile, Southern Africa, the Nile, or the Mekong. And yeah. they will come back so enriched once they cruise these rivers with the personal experiences that we all provide that they'll be thankful to the travel advisor to introducing, to planting that seed about why not try this?
And to add to that, it's also the age group. I think our agents and our members out there have to comfortably promote this and actively sell this to a slightly younger audience, because I think there might be a predisposition of thinking, you know, these trips in Europe may not be as active as I want them to be. And they're starting to get, I know that, you know, Gary and Steve obviously offer maybe biking tours in the cities and more active stuff. But in our destinations, you can get up early and do hikes. You can go out for walks. You can go for runs. You can go to what we call them power hikes in the Amazon. We call them, you know, we have 12 bikes on every ship, and every day I basically, when I get on board on the Mekong, I basically bike the entire Mekong, because every day I'm out on the bike from 8, come back for meals, the boat repositions in the afternoon, and you can do that on the Mekong. There's incredible bike paths all through Vietnam and Cambodia, and these are very active trips if you want them to be. If you
if
don't,
you
that's fine.
Be, yeah, it sounds like you don't really need the river ship, right?
I mean,
well, it's a floating base camp.
if you go into Siem Reap, look at the demographic of Siem Reap. They're all 20 to 35 year olds, and they found that destination often without the guidance of a travel agent. Their people are going there. Now just take that next step and introduce a river cruise opportunity.
Yeah. Let me ask Steve, in terms of, because obviously you're getting your river cruises in the Nile, maybe from other Tauk guests who are interested. Is that what's happening, or are they going directly to the Nile first?
We're seeing our guests seeking the Nile as a primary destination. It's a great way for us to bring new people into the Tauk experience.
Right.
So we're seeing a lot of demand from new people. Egypt as a destination is just very appealing right now, and we're seeing huge demand for it. Our loyal patrons, regardless of whether they've been to Europe with us river cruising or to North America with us on our land tours, you know, they tend to stay in the brand, and they, you know, are just as likely to go to an exotic destination as anywhere else. It's sort of, once they are loyal, they'll go anywhere we go.
Right.
But, you know, the thing about exotic destinations is they're not that exotic anymore, right? Meaning, and I think Gary mentioned this earlier, is what people used to think of as far off lands are not that hard to get to anymore, right? And you know, one of our most popular trips is Australia, New Zealand. And that's a 21-hour flight for most people.
Yeah.
Right? And Antarctica is one of the most popular destinations we travel. So the idea of travel advisors matching a client to these destinations is just as easy as having the conversation, what are the places you've always dreamed of going?
Yeah, that's true.
And let people be their guide. Get it out of them. Let them tell you what are the places they've always dreamed of, and then share with them how they can experience that destination. And if they say, I want to go to the Mekong, or I want to go to the Amazon, or I want to go to Egypt, get them there in the most comfortable and elegant way possible, and they will be very happy that they didn't think of exotic, quote unquote, as a barrier to entry and experience.
Absolutely. Now, I want to go to Gary about, has the pandemic sort of, aside from just completely ending it for about a year, but what has the pandemic done to change your category, exotic river cruising? And are the advantages of a more exotic luxury river cruise in the current environment sort of much more appealing? What's going on? I mean, is the pandemic had any effect as we emerge?
Well, because Egypt is opened, I mean, that is selling extremely well.
Right.
And the same thing with the Chobe down in Southern Africa, because you can travel to these destinations. The Mekong right now, we're still greatly impacted because of the inability to get the clients to the destination. But right. I can tell you the advanced sales are still very, very strong and solid. So people, you know, again, they have this pent up demand. They have money in the bank and they have time. So right. they will go on to the Mekong, and they will take the 7-night cruise with the 7-night land package, because that's what we're finding is they're taking longer vacations, and they're booking the higher categories first, and they're buying business class tickets because they want to reward themselves for just surviving this last year and a half.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, I think,
Francesco, tell us, what are you operating now?
So we started the Aquaneta in June and the Aqua Blue in Indonesia as well. Got our first departure June 19th on the Aqua Blue in Indonesia, Komodo, and then Aquaneta operating as of June. And I'll be hosting also a trip July 3rd in the Aquaneta as well. Okay. So, but I agree. Definitely people's bucket list trips have all of a sudden just skyrocketed to the top. I think those big trips are being moved up a few notches. Everybody's saying, you know what? I'm not holding out anymore. We're going. And they're obviously calling friends and calling family and say, it's time to all get together again. And they're going to do this on our ships. I mean, our private charter demand has skyrocketed because 15 cabins, all you need is 2-3 families or even one large family. and they're traveling. They're arriving, they're saying where they're calling up, they're saying we're all vaccinated, are the protocols in place? Obviously, in our ships, we're very small and very manageable as far as operational, both from a protocols aspect to the management. And I think the big advantage also that all of us have is that we are flagged in the countries that we operate. And right. So that's a big, that's, you know, a, 12 months ago, people were worried about getting stuck on ships on a, you know, Liberia, Panama flag ship in Melbourne or something. And this is not a concern on river cruising. You're operating in inland waterways. You're operating on countries that you operate within their coastal waterways. And all of a sudden, you're able to disembark and embark guests as many times as you want throughout the entire itinerary, 20 times a day if you want. And you're docking every night, either on the water's edge or in the middle of the river. So I think that's also a big comfort factor for when you're operating these countries, that, you know, the next airport or the next destination is no more than, you know, an hour's drive. That's a lot of comfort to be given these days, huh?
No, absolutely.
Hey, Francesco, hold on a second. Are you doing the Spice Islands on a small vessel?
Yeah, we have the first scheduled FIT cruiser into the Spice Islands.
Wow, okay. My brother, my brother has a resort on the island of Roti.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, which is very close when you're going to Komodo. Yeah. Anyway, that's sort of off topic here, but a beautiful, beautiful part of the world. Again,
yeah.
You won't see any other vessels exploring that area.
No, that is unique in that area. I do want to get to Steve in terms of what the pandemic, during this pause, what innovations have you sort of introduced or discovered for this particular category? I mean, obviously it applies to your other river cruise vessels as well to some extent, but any other innovations in terms of things that you said, hey, we can do this better or we can do this differently?
I think the most important thing we've done is, you know, understand what our guests require to comfortably return to traveling again.
Right.
You know, understanding what are the protocols we need to have in place that will make people feel comfortable being back out there together. And I think for us, the biggest innovation, and I don't even want to call it an innovation, I think it was more of a connection we made, is the importance of shared responsibility and community when we travel together.
Right.
And, you know, we have always enjoyed the idea that we have like-minded travelers, as, you know, Arthur Tauck said back in 1925, one congenial party. But now we have put together what we're calling our Travel Well Pledge, which is really the requirement that our guests acknowledge that when we travel together, we have to do things for each other to keep each other safe that may be different than what we might do at home. Meaning, right, if we're asked to sit in a certain seat on the coach or maintain social distance or wear a mask in a certain place, we do so because we're a community traveling together to share the joy of this experience. And I think that communicating that to our guests and advisor partners, that's the expectation when we travel, I think was an important statement, that's how we're going to get back to traveling. That, along with, you know, now having medical personnel on board all of, right, our ships, was an important addition for the time being. Right? Yeah. It's a sense of peace of mind that people will have, but we're all going to be vaccinated anyway at that point. And we're not saying that we're mandating vaccines, but 97% of our guests already indicated that they're vaccinated.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that is probably going to be a requirement, at least for the time being, that people have to be vaccinated. And when you restart operations, absolutely in Europe, that'll be the same thing. I do want to ask Gary the same question in terms of what kind of innovations, things that you've had to change. It can be pandemic related or just things that you discovered that you had new stuff. And I'm talking about exotic cruising specifically.
Well, it's been almost easier with the exotics because, again, the smaller vessels to yeah. work with. On our larger ships, you know, we've changed, I should say, the buffet to more action stations where you're going to different areas where the food is being served. We're now also providing dining opportunities on your balconies on the ships. There's more tracking as far as we have an app that you can...
Right.
while you're off the ship, keep current on all the different activities. And if you choose, you can then we can track and report on where we are, and you can keep up to date on you know, uploading your vaccine information, uploading your proof of a negative test. So we're doing all of these types of things to really just make people feel more comfortable.
No, and that's absolutely key. And Francesco, same question in terms of what you've had to institute, innovations and things you've had to look at.
I mean, obviously, like Gary said, given our size, we have an ability to implement and roll out much faster anything we want to do. So obviously, that's to our advantage. Because we're dictated by local waterways and local regulations, obviously, we abide by those. And then we usually raise the bar and go above and beyond those, because obviously, those standards are acceptable, but not our standards. And the excursions are all small. The ships are small. The crew is obviously fully either vaccinated or tested before, because some different countries we operated, the protocols of rolling out vaccines aren't 100% yet, but they're getting there, especially because all our crew is considered in the maritime sector. And so they have obviously all priority. So all those things are giving the comfort to our audience, our guests and travelers. And that's why we're starting operations come the summer.
No, absolutely. Now, the final question here. Now, what is the future for exotic luxury river cruising? Are there more places, more off the beaten path rivers and itineraries that you might feature in the future? What's going on? Let me start with you, Francesco, because you have done, you moved sort of from the Amazon, then all the way over to the Mekong, then obviously what you're doing now with your yacht out there. But are there more places that we can have these exotic? I mean, there's some places we can go back to. I mean, I have to tell you, I mean, I was on a Myanmar cruise a few years ago, and obviously that's off the books right now because of the political situation. But are there more rivers to explore? Tell me.
So obviously the biggest change that we did last year was to demonstrate that our brand has the capacity and the know-how and the operational facility to obviously enter small ship coastal expeditions. And that's where I cut my teeth many years ago, not with my business, but in the Galapagos Islands. So because of that experience, I opened up the Aqua Blue in Indonesia, covering Komodo National Park, the Spice Islands, and West Papua, Raja Ampat. Those are three destinations that are everybody's top of the list. And yes, given the size of all our ships, coastal waterways is definitely a future. So not only riverways, coastal waterways provides an opportunity to still have that kind of eye level cruising opportunity, stay active, stay close to shore where all the activity happens. And yeah, usually under normal circumstances, I'd be spending 3-4 months a year scouting new parts of the world. Many days on the Zambezi, on the Chobe, actually with Tony Stern, the original owner of the Zambezi Queen, and then on Lake Kariba in Zimbabwe. So there's plenty of opportunities. The only thing is that I never bite off more than I can chew. My projects are labors of love. I scout the destination, I design the ship, then I hire yards to build them. So they're about 3 years. Every 3 years I can put out a boat, and our newest baby, Aquaneta, has kept me busy, but there's more up my sleeve.
Absolutely. Now, Steve, where do you think exotic river cruising will go next for Tauk? Will you venture beyond the Nile? Where do you think?
Yes, we're going to venture starting in August. We're going to the Douro.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's an exotic country of Portugal. Yes.
It's exotic for us because it's a year after we were supposed to christen that ship. We're finally going to christen it and start sailing in Portugal. So I was actually
supposed to be on that ship for that christening. So yeah. We missed that one. Yes.
We're continuing to look at adding exotic river cruises as a component of our land journeys, getting back on the Mekong, continuing the Yangtze, potentially the Ganges. River cruising in Europe is our bread and butter, and we will continue to look to expand there. But as a component, like on the Nile, as a component of our land journeys, it adds such a wonderful additional element. And I think we'll continue to look to expand our offering that way.
Absolutely. And we'll leave it with you, Gary. Where next? Maybe where? What's the future for exotic river cruising for Emma Waterway?
Well, Rudy, James, he's all constantly looking for new rivers. But we want to go to a destination where then when we implement the product, we can deliver and meet the client's expectations. That's why we pulled out of Russia. We built a ship for Myanmar, the Irrawaddy, and we're not going there anymore. Right. I mean, I was in Papua New Guinea last year. phenomenal river. But again, how safe is it? So we want to find these great destinations where we have the client's safety in mind and that we could deliver a comfortable experience. But yes, we are looking at new rivers. We have some our eyes on some opportunities here. We're probably moving forward with them, but we're going to keep our cards close to our chest because, you know, I have Francesco and Steve on the line right now, and I don't give them any ideas.
Well, it's interesting. You're talking about Rudy. I mean, if you're with Rudy, I think we have to build a raft and cruise the Amazon or something, right? Is that what he – yeah. Didn't he start that way?
Well, yeah, he started up when Francesco's part of the world, the upper Amazon, I think out of Timbatinga, I can't remember, and he sailed all the way down. I mean, it was 6 months on the Amazon.
Yeah, so. No, I remember that story, and that's how, for Rudy Treiner, that's how river cruising began. It's a pretty good example, actually. And, yeah. And you know,
shooting birds to get some protein, you know, I mean, a whole different part, but that was many, 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 many years ago.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I want to thank all of you for spending some time with us from Singapore to Connecticut to the wilds of the freeway in Los Angeles. I want to thank
James, you. Apologies, James, for my mix-up on my timing.
Not a problem. And we do appreciate you joining us and pulling over because I can see the cars are zipping by you pretty good. But anyway, again, thank you so much.
James, I had a sheriff pull up and look at me and do this. And I sort of waved him, but we're all good.
Well, that's all good. All good.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, no, we just want to say very quickly for the rest of you out there watching our travel advisors, please go look at the exhibition floor and see all of the wonderful exhibitors we have, as well as we have a lot of other panels to choose from, including even more from Gary. I think we have another one with you on it. So please look at that. And we thank you for attending Virtual Vacation Expo. And until the next time for the next panel, have a great day.